Good evening. Welcome to the Amex Citizens Involvement Committee. Appreciate you guys being here tonight. Had a few things on the agenda. Actually, what I think I'm going to do is we'll just let everybody introduce themselves, but then I think I'm going to switch the items. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the state gas tax, and you know we'll have the bike presentation, and we can just kind of end with that. And you guys have your questions answered or anything you're interested in letting us know about it, call it a night. So I guess I'm Curtis Baker. I'm the director of AMS.
Jeff Gardner of the AMS.
Darrell Fineheads, planet of AMS.
Bill Mackey.
You gotta introduce yourself.
CIC member from Cuyahoga Falls.
Fred Wise, kind of like from anywhere around here.
You're a beatnik.
I'm Marilyn Shea Stone. I'm one of the directors of Neo Safe Trails and Routes, Inc. Neostar.
Neostar?
Neostar.
So can you say it again? I'm sorry, it's Northeast?
Northeast Ohio, Safe Trails and Routes.
Okay.
Inc. 501c3 organization. Okay. For the last 8 months or so.
Great.
We mounted Ohio's first ever bicycle film festival at the Highland.
Okay.
Did you go?
No.
You?
I didn't know if I even knew about it.
We saw the flyer, I think.
Yeah. It was, last year was on Sunday, November 4.
Okay.
We're doing it again Sunday, November 3. And we're hoping to, we had a good crowd last year. We felt Highland holds almost 650 and we had half full.
Wow.
But this year we're going to fill it up.
Well, thank you for attending. And so what we were going to talk about first, and really there wasn't a whole lot on the agenda for our TAC meeting today either. Really, the only reason we had to meet was we had an amendment for some safety money that was going to a Streetsboro project that had to get out of our transportation improvement program. But what we did, and I don't know if you guys would be aware of it, so with the state gas tax discussion, at the end of the January meeting at our policy committee voted almost unanimously to provide me with the authorization of writing a letter to our state reps and senators and administration supporting some sort of gas tax increase because they thought DeWine just took over, this is a good time. Well, shortly after that, we realized with the timing of the ODOT budget, which they're getting ready to approve, it has to be approved by the end of March, we realized that by the time March came around and they were asking me to like provide a recommendation for what that letter should be, Governor DeWine actually put out his own proposal. So, and then because of the budget timeline, we had discussed with our chairwoman, we decided to send those letters out before the policy committee meeting next week. That purpose being because it was being discussed at House committee, and we wanted to get them to the House and to the Senate before that bill had, you know, taken shape. So we did get all of our letters out supporting Mike DeWine's proposal. However, later that evening, the House came out with their own proposal, which equated to about 14 cents. It's 10.7 cents and 20 cents for diesel. Roughly what it was about 72% of what the governor had asked for. Once it moved over to the Senate, it's hit a pretty big brick wall. We're now, frankly, almost expecting the Senate to go to zero. And
go to what?
Zero.
No gas increase?
Yeah, to no increase. And then potentially, maybe there will be a small increase in conference committee, or maybe it'll stay zero and they'll kick the gas tax issue to the general revenue budget, which is due at the end of June. So, you know, we continue to advocate to our state senators now. In our region on the transportation committee is Christina Daly Rogner. That's right, Rogner. she's on that committee, so we, you know, sent her some items. The big thing for us as an MPO, and the reason, even though it's state funding, the reason we're interested in it primarily is, you know, the split is 60-40. It goes 60 to the state, 40 to locals. In the House bill, they actually changed it to 55-45, so locals were even getting more. If the DeWine proposal went through, a city like Akron would stand to get a $4 million increase in terms of their local dollars that they could use towards highway maintenance, highway capital, highway operations.
That's an annual.
That would be annual.
And would Summit County get a similar amount?
Yeah, Summit County would get an amount, as in the county engineer's office, and then the OPWC program, which is one of the, you know, the large, it's a competitive fund that the communities apply for and score, it's a scoring fund, that would grow by 72%. So it was a big, you know, it would be a very big boon for our locals. And even honestly, the House bill would still be two, you know, Akron would get $3 million instead of $4 million, but $3 million compared to nothing is still pretty substantial for a larger community. You know, so I think in anything right now, we're doing our best to try to convince them that, like, it can't go any lower than what the House proposed. Unfortunately, our understanding is that there are just a few senators that are just over their dead body. And there's some rumors that, you know, maybe they'll work something out, but the thought is that if it goes to the general revenue budget, then they can start talking offsets to other taxes, which in some ways, if you start offsetting the gas tax, you're offsetting it with general revenue funds, which seems like a really bad idea because for anyone that works in these spaces, like, you never want to take on a more restrictive fund for a less restrictive fund, you know, so you're, and that's what they would essentially be doing. They'd be raising a tax that would be required to work on one thing while lowering a tax that would be.
There was a news item as I was driving here that said that the Senate was likely to do 5.9.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So if they do 5.9, which was another thing we had heard, 6,
yeah,
then maybe you conference to 9 or 10, maybe.
And there were a couple things like no inflationary index on it.
Yeah, the inflationary index is dead.
And it would be phased in over 2 years rather than a single year. That was according to Karen Kessler.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, because we're just, you know, things are constantly changing. And, you know, one of the things that was coming up was, like, ODOT was having this credibility issue with the senators. They were disagreeing with what ODOT said the need was. They were pushing back on a lot of things. And it was kind of been unfortunate to watch. There was a lot of momentum going into last week, and it's really dried up quite a bit. So we continue to monitor it, but, I mean, honestly, hearing that is probably more positive than what I've heard more recently. So, we take what we can get. So, but that's pretty much where it is. My understanding was I did get an email that they're expected to vote, I believe, on Wednesday of next week. I should check because I have it. Said it, but so the hope is that they actually end up, let's see it in here. Then I think the committee would make their proposal, it would be passed in committee, and then early next week be adopted, and then it would go to conference. And hopefully, the conference report would take a week or so for something for the governor to sign. What will be interesting to me is that, you know, the governor has been just adamant about 18 cents, and, you know, which we appreciate, but it's unclear, like, what he'll do. I mean, we're assuming he'll sign it, but then will they look to do other things in the general revenue to supplant that? So.
Did we not, on the CIC and for the policy committee, maybe in 2018, for sure by 2017, we passed resolutions asking for the gas tax to be raised.
Yeah.
Can we forward that from the MPO back down to our people?
Yes, and we have been.
All right.
That's been included, is that, you know, in 2018 we passed the resolution.
If the mayors all think it's a good thing here,
right,
in this area, the question should be, why are you not listening to the people?
What is Regner? How does she stand?
I don't know for sure. So, you know, we've got sort of mixed messages from everybody, basically, what we've spoken to. But it sounds like a lot of it, what we heard too, was a lot of it is that the rank and file knows their needs there. But, you know, there's the leadership team is sort of kind of pushing back.
The ones disconnected from reality.
An alternate reality.
So it'll be interesting, because what I keep thinking is whatever the Senate does will be the floor, and then hopefully whatever can be made up in that conference. So if the gap is higher, or if the gap's 6 cents to 10 cents, then maybe we get to 8, you know, or 9. I do think transit's going to get hit hard in Senate in terms of the money that they did receive is going to be taken out. And I'm curious about the split, because the, like I said, the House increased the split for locals. I'm curious if the Senate would do the same thing. So, any other questions or comments on that?
Is the opposition to transit in the Senate, is that coming from the rural areas?
I think it's coming from the, I think it's coming from, yeah, probably. And, you know, I was going to say the Republicans, but I mean, it's primarily a Republican. You know, and there's, for whatever reason, there's just always been a trans animosity. But, and then in fairness too, the issue with the transit stuff is that, so transit gets what's called, like, they don't get any state operating dollars. What the state does is it takes some of its federal dollars and it flexes it to a capital program that basically gives the transit agencies money to buy buses, because the federal money can't be used for operating. So when the state does this federal flex, they're not actually giving transit more, I mean, in terms of their, you know, state gas tax money or anything like that. They're just converting more to the federal. So in a way, it hurts ODOT because they lose that federal money. And in a lot of ways, it doesn't help the transit agencies, because their biggest need is the drive, is paying for the operations. It's not buying new buses. I mean, granted, they can all, you know, it's not like they would say no to the money, but what they really need is they need a state dedicated source that they can use for that's more flexible than the federal funds. So we were actually talking about that at the meeting today, and our policy committee is advocating for a better solution for transit, because even the transit agencies are saying, you know, it doesn't make sense to rob Peter to pay Paul, which is really what they're doing. They want a separate top. And so we're going to continue to have those discussions too. But yeah, for whatever reason, it's funny because the House actually bumped up the transit ask, and then in every quote we've seen, the Senate has said, yeah, the transit's coming down. Whether it's back to the $70 million or back to like the $40 million, But
now their maid's going to get to their houses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate. I mean, it's just, and in terms of, for the, you know, we're lucky Metro RTA is pretty well funded operations because of the sales tax. PARTA, not so much. It's Portage County. They do need that tax. And then GCRTA, I guess one of their big issues why they advocate for the capital funds is because the rail. So they can use that capital funding for rail improvement for their system. For Metro and PARTA, like, they pretty much can use it to buy buses. And at some point, you know, it's an ongoing issue.
Well, I, for one, support the 17 cents. In fact, I wish we had gone to 22 cents, so it'd been 50 cents a gallon flat across the state.
Yeah.
That would have given us money to really attack the bridge problem, and then the highways.
Yeah.
The terrible shape of potholes here in Northeast Ohio.
The other part of that is that because of the improved gas mileage and the electric boat cars, you're not getting a lot of the trucks.
Yeah, that was in one of the articles. They were talking about like a $100 fee on electric.
Yeah, vehicles. And they do have that. I mean, the one thing I'll say, not, I think it's a good step, but it raises $2 million. You know, in like a $1.2 billion bill, by charging $100 or $200 for a registration fee.
Yeah.
There's only 15,000 of those vehicles in Ohio, which, I mean, it's great that there's some, but it's not. It wouldn't move the needle in terms of.
Yeah,
but the increased gas.
The efficiency has So even though we're driving more, there's no...
I see that in my driving.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think everybody does. I mean, you know, because just even the biggest cars are more fuel efficient.
We just skipped around a little bit here.
So, it's... honestly, I just find the subject fascinating. I think it's interesting to see where we're going to end up, and most likely it is somewhere between what we're hearing with the House and with the Senate, then it's not going to be enough. Because one of the issues is ODOT is carrying almost $400 million in debt service, like a 6-cent gas tax increase. What ODOT will get probably won't even cover the debt service. So, you know, in terms of, it might help them maintain, but it's not going to help much more than that.
Maybe they can lease out all the streets in Akron, get a bond issue.
Well, that was the thing, is like, what's interesting too is that what we're finding out, we're talking to local communities, is that, you know, most of that money that the locals get doesn't end up going into capital, it goes into operations, highway maintenance and operations. So in some ways you can say, well, it helps pay for the coal patch and for the pothole filling and all that, but you're not getting, most communities aren't using it to resurface more roads. But the good news is that any, you know, most communities are paying more than what they get in gas tax for their highway operations and maintenance division. So anything that they can put more towards that they don't have to then, you know, bring the general revenue back, is a positive. It's a win. So, I mean, I think the locals at this point, just after the last 8 years of getting cut, you know, in terms of what they're able to collect because of what the state's done, I think they'll take anything. But it seems like the bigger crux of the issue is actually between ODOT and the Sun, which is interesting. Anything else on that? Welcome, Mr. Hunt. Are you good?
Fine.
Good. So now I'll turn it over to Daryl. He's going to talk a little bit about our bicycle and pedestrian plan, and we'll just have a discussion about it.
Yeah, so we just wanted to give you an update of where we're at. It's not really the official draft, if you will, but really just where we're headed with this draft. Now, we're updating both the 2015 pedestrian plan and the 2016 bicycle plan, and we're putting them together in one plan. Seems how there was some redundancy between the two plans anyway. We felt that with this update, and even though it's a little bit long overdue, we're working to put those two plans together and make it flow so that you can understand what we're doing. This update is also pretty general, and I'll explain why the next update that we do in a couple of years will be a little bit more specific to the communities in some of the first time. So we have a purpose, you know, we have pictures from last year's Jane's Walks and from our Bike and Brainstorm that was in college. This, of course, was about Summer Lane. We have, you know, the purpose, of course, is to make walking and biking an integral part of people's life. And we want it to be safe, effective, and accessible. So, I mean, I think that's pretty general as far as bike and pet plans are concerned. Some of the framework and the context and contents of it, we want to first evaluate the existing conditions, what's out there now. We have a pretty lengthy introduction as to where we're at in our MS area. Then we want to examine trends not only in our part, but in other cities, other communities, other states for that matter, what's going on in other trends. We're going to look at making connections through our existing transportation networks. Where can we make those connections? And then consider the recommendations at the end of this plan for incorporating high quality bicycle and pedestrian improvements. And then we want to use and we want to encourage the use of what AMS has and the strategies that we have available for the cities in our area to get to those recommendations and to fulfill those. So also in this first part of our plan, we'll have this map that has the existing bicycle network. I know you can't really read this, it's not very detailed at this in this view, but in the plan, which will be in a landscape form, sort of like this, you'll be able to open it up, we'll make sure that that map is very readable, so you can pick out, you know, if you're looking at a certain community, you know, where this is and what that route is. We're working to update that. We have a few more trails, connections that have been made that we have to add to the map. But the map will really do a good job.
You know what that is for the regular?
It's a bridge over the Fish Creek.
No.
I'm very intimately familiar with.
Actually, I wasn't pointing to that. This is where Freedom ends right now.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
At the gap, you know, like that, we've got to traverse that piece.
And the rail line isn't owned by Metro.
I thought the parks had a way around that. I thought they had worked out something they were going to do. An idea.
Well, and the solutions are not positive. I mean, they're on road, like on sidewalk type solutions, which I don't think are acceptable.
Is this Summit and Portage?
Yes. And yeah, that's it. We're going to break that off so that you can.
And then what's the?
Wayne. We have two townships in Wayne. So we have Milton and Chippewa townships. So Doylestown and Britton is in our region.
So we'll have the sidewalk inventory again. I know you can't really read that up there, but in the plan we'll make sure that that's whether it's a full dot map or what. But it won't change too much. We're going to work in the next 2 years to really get more info on what sidewalks have been completed or redone or connected to or what have you. But in this case, we'll have this map once again in our plan.
We don't do aerial photo anymore, do we? Every 5 years, remember, we hired an airplane to do this, and now we have Google Maps?
We do, but the counties do it. The counties pay to do it. The
counties still do it?
Mm-hmm. And we get that data. We do a lot of shared data with them. But you're right. Almost the most the most current are usually privately provided via Google. We don't. You know, we can't grab them and put them in our database.
Right.
But they've really taken the lead on aerial imagery.
So some of the other trends that we have is. About 230 miles of streets have been marked with bike lanes since 93. But those, sometimes that gets interrupted when, you know, street narrows or changes. And so, you know, we don't want to see this sign too often. We really want to continue to make those connections.
So that would be
sticking a sign that says that ends.
That would
or
be.
Or bike lane ends.
Where the trail ends or the bike lane ends.
Right.
And add this to the construction to widen that road to make it bike friendly?
Yeah, something similar in that effect if we can be correct.
Fred, do you think that sounds, Daryl and I were talking about this number and where we got it from. Part of you doesn't think that
which?
The 230 miles of bike lanes.
I think I pulled that off of my client.
I'm thinking in my head.
No, I have seen things about different cities, communities, saying that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't match up what I know is there.
Yeah.
They might be calling something that is
And that's what I was almost wondering is like Akron Peninsula and Riverview, you know, where what we always call like their bike friendly roads, but because they have a widened shoulder, but they're not bike lanes. And I wonder if we're including those in that number because, I mean, I was telling Daryl like 10 years ago, Akron only had like 6 miles of bike lanes. So, we got to figure out where we got
that.
I mean, I'm not throwing you under the bus, but I was curious because that just seemed like, I was like, God, that seems like almost a rosier picture than I think.
I agree.
I know, I saw it somewhere, so wherever I saw it, maybe. I think from a previous thing.
Yeah, which we might have, and we might have gotten it from somewhere. I just trying to figure out where we got it.
I have seen that number too, and I don't know where it came from.
You've seen that number too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe from you, but
yeah, exactly. There's the circular.
So, and then there's about 125 miles of trails, and since 2015, we've had about 17 miles of trail since that time. So, and then the sidewalk numbers will probably stay the same. We're working, because we do want to make this update here soon, rather than, you know, really delving into sidewalks and what have been done. It's a little bit tedious then.
Will you be enumerating these trails?
Oh, yeah.
Will you be telling the conditions of them currently, and whether they're stone or they're paved or whatever?
We haven't thought about that. It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, I think it would be worthwhile to do that.
Yeah, I agree. We'll be able to count bike and ped now a lot easier, and we'll see that here in a second. But that's a good idea.
Theoretical question. In the Falls Press for Chicago Falls, they're talking about taking an old golf course down along the river somewhere and turn it into a 180 family.
124.
Whatever it is.
It's
yeah, something like that. And everybody's worried, well, that area's going to flood again, you know, because it is in a valley.
It'll flood somewhere. Every time you build anything, you just add it.
Yeah.
It's kind of flood.
But nobody, but they're worried about the, you know, traffic on the road. And
how many units?
It's 124. 128.
I remember some big number.
It's on 28 acres. So it's about 5.5 units.
So I'm wondering, well, nobody's mentioned if there's going to be sidewalks in that area.
No.
Nobody's mentioned if there's going to be a bike lane leaving that housing development out to the main road.
They still have trouble with one after and built on Portage Trail there.
So which golf course?
In Sycamore.
The new one.
It's quite two lots down from Papa Joe's on Akron Peninsula.
Timber Town.
Yeah, just a small.
Yeah. A lot of vehicles come out and.
And the council or the planning commission just approved the rezoning of it to a suburban development area, which provides for that many houses. And they also asked them to do a traffic study, which they hadn't done, apparently. And they also brought up the issue of the flooding.
Right.
And is that in Cuyahoga Falls?
Yes.
Yes, technically, yeah. It's in there somewhere.
It is. Yeah.
Right. So I don't know.
Yeah,
what
I see it.
I mean,
yes, and then it's really like in the valley.
It's right in there.
Yeah.
But if they were the people that were living near there were pushing it that it was going to close to the national park. Well, it's really not. Mm-hmm. And there's an awful lot of stuff already in there, so there's no way they're going to stop the rezoning. But the best they can do is reduce the density, because it is in a situation that's only about half a mile or a quarter of a mile from the Portage Trail, Portage Path intersection, which is a bad intersection as it is. And you're going to be adding another 128 homes or 124 homes with traffic coming out of what has to be just one street.
Right. A block away, block and a half away,
yeah.
Something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, the addition of sidewalks or bike lanes or, you know.
Well, and AP doesn't have any bike lanes. In fact, they don't even have a berm in that area. Mm-hmm. So from a bicycling standpoint, it's
was
bad.
There was a golf course.
Yeah, I can see one.
I can't remember.
It's interesting.
There's a driving range there.
I wonder what the code is in the Falls. You know your code? A lot of communities put in, new units need to have new developments to have sidewalks. They have green for that.
I got to ask.
They didn't for our, they have sidewalks on one side of the street in our development.
Oh, they could have them inside the development, but not on Akron Peninsula.
They only have a short frontage on Akron Peninsula. So it can't be more than 100 or 200 feet.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry to interrupt.
Sorry.
That's what you do best, Bill.
And then also part of the trends now. I don't know. Dave did a crash report presentation. I think at one of the meetings, probably at the end of last year. This is directly out of his crash report. He did a great job in gathering this data about bicycle-related crashes. You can see. For bicycles, for cyclists, we were at 2 fatalities in 2016, none in 2017. So that's a good thing. although we went up in injuries and total crashes, we actually decreased between those 2 years. And that's all the data that we have at this point.
I'm in a meeting right now. I'll call you back.
There was one fatality in 2018, so in Hudson.
Okay.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if the number of accidents is consistent with amount of use. Like if it's just if more people are riding on the road than they used to be, then you're going to have.
Oh yeah.
Just statistically speaking, you're probably going to have more crashes, or if that was a really bad year, and without a few more years of data.
Well, that was just an accident. That was the ABC accident.
You
guys need that.
2015 was in Cuyahoga Falls. Cuyahoga County. It was in.
That's right. It was.
Yeah.
That's right. I was in Brecksville.
That was. Yeah. Was that the one where the guy, Velo? Was it the Velo event? The guy. Isn't the one where the car just plowed into like 4 or 5 bikers?
Yeah.
That was the ABC. Right?
That was the ABC.
It was September 17th, 2015. Snowville Road.
But I don't know where the 2 fatalities came from in 2016.
We just took that right out of the data crash report. And then on the other side, for pedestrians, we actually went up in the number of fatalities and then went down a little bit in the overall crashes and injuries. So actually we're going down and up, and then
I think 2017 was Main Street in Coventry when that woman was texting and driving and rode up on the curb and hit those middle schoolers. And 2 of them passed away. Was that? I think that was 2017.
I don't recall from when Dave did the report whether those were rural or in cities. Is there any? Did we have that broken out that way?
We could grab them. Yeah, we probably have them by community actually. See, but I mean we. Have my location, so
I'm just wondering if people are walking on.
Yeah, no, that's great, right? And quite honestly, too. And this is what Dave will tell you, which sometimes I don't want to say irks me, but it's like because I think there's truth to it, but it's sort of like a lot of these where you've got death is they're really strange. It's not usually what we imagine as being. It'll be somebody walking at 3 a.m., blah, blah, blah. It'll be something that, or someone was intoxicated, or, whereas from like an infrastructure pattern, I'm not sure if there's much that you could say do. Even with like when a bike mows down a bunch of bike riders, a car mows down a bunch of bike riders, it's not necessarily the infrastructure, it's more the education and what the person was doing, blah, blah, blah. It is unfortunate. Well, I'll let you maybe talk about the national.
We've made NeoStars. We're trying to reach out to the metro system, the bus system, mm-hmm. and see whether on the back of some of the buses they would include a message about if you cannot see mm-hmm. where you're going because of sun glare. Pull over. Mm-hmm. Because we've had that the three collisions,
right.
The three fatalities in these horrible collisions have been sun glare, and the 3 foot rule helps because in 2015, of course that was a left turn, but this most recent one on 303. Clearly he hadn't allowed 3 feet, but it was somewhere again. So, we've had some debates with people about whether whether changing the signs about bicycles using the roads
right.
to a 3 foot sign, whether that makes any difference. And people say, well, no, it doesn't. Well, I think there are a lot of motorists who still are not aware that that is the law.
Well, Daryl and I saw today, there was a bicyclist and a woman, he was riding down downtown street, and the woman to pass him passed him on the right, went around, like, he was kind of in the center, and she went on the, I mean, it was, and it just, and he didn't realize that she had done that, and I mean, we almost, I mean, just this after, brought him back from working out of the lunch, and it's just like, you know, and I think that's true. I think people don't know what they, I think most people, they get behind a bicycle and they panic. Yeah. I mean, not for lack of a better, you know, they don't know what to do, or they want to pass, and they want to pass as fast as possible, and they just want to get away from it, you know. It's a challenge, right? And I think I think the education piece, what we've been talking about a lot, is how important that education piece is.
Yeah. What's ODOT doing about signage on the 3-foot rule, if anything?
Yes. Yeah. That we got that from ODOT, the okay. State of ODOT, yeah, and that's what they have a social media campaign, they have these things, and yeah, I'll mention that here in a couple of slides. But I also did want to mention that, again, this presentation tonight doesn't really give you all of the details of what's going in the plan. So in this section, we have safety tips, an entire, I'll say 2 pages, safety tips for cyclists, safety tips for drivers, encountering a cyclist, safety tips for pedestrians, safety tips for drivers encountering stuff. I mean, we have a whole list of things, again, more to the general sense, but more education. We also have a whole slide, or not slide, but page dedicated to the 3-foot. That was, you know, the House bill that was passed in 2017. And I'd love to get my hands on some of those yellow signs that Bloom City has down in the valley, right there on right before the sidewalk. They have a big yellow sign that says "Give them 3 feet."
And you can order them on the internet.
Yeah, but right.
Yeah.
But for public, I mean, personally, I would get one, but for public use. I'm not getting up the money back.
Daryl, is the
I can make my own sign.
Is the thing that you guys saw today, is that going to be one of your tips? Don't pass on the right on a bicycle. Think about that, because when you're on a bicycle, you're only looking on the left because all your mirrors
right.
are there.
Yeah.
You've got nothing on your right. You're never expecting anything.
Right.
So
I'll make sure, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's pretty detailed.
Maybe we should ask Ohio, just like the Amish buggies, about the slow-moving sign there. Maybe bicycles should have to carry that 3 feet clearance sign on the back of the bike. With flashing lights.
Yeah.
So staying with pedestrians, as Curtis alluded to, was this article in USA Today, and that's for the entire USA. We hit a 28-year high, and suggesting that SUV raises safety risks.
Why do they attribute it to SUVs?
Yeah, what's a
good question? I've been talking about
it. Yeah. So
more SUVs.
The thought being, and I honestly think this is almost more of like, I mean, I think this argument is sort of like a little bit environmental too, like just people don't like SUVs, but they're easy to blame. But I think the idea is that when you're hit by a car and the front bumper is lower, typically you're going to go up and over. You're going to get hurt, right? But you're going to go up and over. When you hit an SUV, you go down and you get run over. And so, like it makes rational sense. But what we know from just looking at speed data is that if you get hit by a vehicle at 35 miles an hour, it doesn't matter what the vehicle is. You're going to die. I mean, 95% of the time, if you get hit by a 35 mile an hour, I think it might even be 30 miles an hour or more, your chance of survival is less than 10%. And another part of this is that SUVs are a larger and larger part of the road mix than they were 10 years ago, too. So, you know, to me, I still see more of a, I mean, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm being defensive about my SUV or not, you know, my Subaru Forester, that we take right away from me, but it just seems like, you know, you get hit by a car, you get hit by, you know, you get hit, I mean, to me, I think that's the wrong issue to focus on. I guess it's more of it is like, no, we need to make it safer for pedestrians, not worry about what's, they need to not get hit at all,
right,
essentially,
right.
Like, But the rationale is, yeah, they get run over, they don't get flipped over, which, I mean, I guess if you had to choose one, you'd probably pick going up and over.
But so Ohio had a 15% increase in pedestrian deaths from 2017 to 2018. And so, Marilyn, as you asked what we're doing, or what state of Ohio is doing, they have marketing materials. They're magnets and they're decals. There's two different types. There's three messages back there. Please help yourself take some of them.
Oh, the bomb.
Oh. Yeah, so you
can see stack.
I take that whole stack of three.
Take them all.
Yeah, and I'd like to re-up for the Ride of Silence, if I could get for everybody who comes. That would be terrific. Yeah,
sure.
I'll be in touch with them.
Great. Yeah, I'll be there. Safe Routes to School. Social. They're doing a social media campaign. Safe Routes to School. They're allocating about $4 million. Annually to safe, making sure that K-8 students are safe when they're walking around in school. I do sit on the public school board, Safe Routes to School. We do meet every once in a month. It's a committee consisting of Josh Allen from the Akron Public Schools. I'm not sure what his title is, coordinator, student coordinator maybe. Summit County Public Health, Christy Cato sits there as well on that committee. Akron Children's has two representatives that come to that meeting every time, and then the City of Akron and then myself. And in our meeting this afternoon, I said to the other representatives from the other communities that if you have committees like that, we'd like to be involved just so that we can get the word out too through our social media. Just working together on
that stuff. Not a lot of the other municipalities send people to this meeting of yours, the Safe Route?
Oh, it's community by community, so the community themselves will form a committee.
Okay.
And so Akron has received quite a bit of money from the state program, so they find it useful to have a community.
Right.
Some other communities might have a community to put together a plan and they disband.
Greensboro? Or Hudson?
I doubt. Hudson does.
Hudson does.
Barbara does. So, Barbara. Okay. Yeah. So. But so, also too, in the next section, we talk about counting. And in years past, we had to have someone physically sit out at a trail or an intersection and count people as they cyclists and people and all that stuff. Then we progressed to the MyoVision, which was an electronic stand it up. It'll read and count traffic, no problem, but it only takes a video of the intersection or the corridor you're looking at, and so you have to bring it back to the office and physically put that video, that CD, into the computer, and then actually count people as you see that person walk by, because it doesn't actually count, and then you put it into this Excel sheet. However, and this is why in the next couple of years we intend to have more detailed information. Because they just came out with Streetlight, which we're getting familiar with, but it just kind of came out. And this will count, the use of this application will count bike and pet, and give you some detail. Curtis could probably give you a little bit.
Yes, so the magic black box that you carry in your pocket, the data that it's providing, big tech or whatever, they're selling that data back to government and state transportation agencies. And so ODOT has a $2 million contract with this company that basically purchased a bunch of cell phone data, and then they develop algorithms and stuff to be able to create average indexes to estimate, one, like origin and destination. So we can do an analysis where we could say grab Summit Mall and say, we want to see where those people are coming from to visit Summit Mall between the hours of, the retail hours of, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. or whatever. And it'll actually show us via traffic zone where, how many people are coming from Northampton, how many people are coming from Copley,
And they're getting this off of the phone.
Yeah, it'll provide us with income data. It'll provide us with speed data, how quickly do they take it. It would provide us with trip circuity, so how close to, as the crow flies, was the trip. It'll show us race. It'll show us college education of those people. And it's not necessarily like telling the individuals. It's aggregating data that's a sample size collection, and then with the algorithm kind of estimating it out. The positive thing about all this is that it also does the same for bicycles and pedestrians. So, like this example, we started playing around with. This is 303, the trailhead of 303. And it looks at 2 months of data that they have right now. They're adding more data, but one is like May 2017, and another one was June 2018, or the months that are on there, sample size. And what it can tell you is by average day or average weekend day, how many people are using it between a certain time on an average day. Our goal is to create a bike ADT map, like a bike average traffic map, so that we can actually get a sense of, okay, you know, the towpath averages this many bicyclists at this, you know, between this trailhead and that trailhead, we get roughly per day 100 riders or 200 riders or 300 riders or whatever. So this piece actually just shows the average day, which combines weekend and weekday at different points along the bike and hike trail. So I think obviously you have days where you have many more than this, and then you have days where there are zero because it's raining or it's a crappy day or whatever. So this is sort of an average, but I think what as a planning tool, it can provide us with a lot of really good data about sort of how these things are being used, even time periods, like what are the most popular time periods for them to be used, splits. Like, I didn't get a chance to do this when I did this analysis, but, you know, who's going south, who's going, you know, to see some of that idea of how the usage is, it just really opens up. And because we can never count, we don't have the staff, we don't have the time, we don't have the ability to take every section of bike, you know, and have somebody sit out there or put a camera. We only have one camera, so it would take us years, you know, to do this. So this provides us with a new tool to sort of analyze bicycle and pedestrian use. And you can also do it via, like, we could pick sections where there's bike lanes and determine, you know, if there's a sample size large enough, it can tell us, hey, people are actually riding their bikes, you know. I mean, we wouldn't know for sure they were in the lane, but we would know they were using the corridor with the bike lane.
This works for cars, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, so, I mean, yeah, the data applications for vehicles is even greater, and because the sample size is so much larger, it's even more accurate because, you know, we're doing analysis. We did a, you can do turning movement analysis. We can basically say, okay, we had one where we took North Avenue in Talmadge Circle, and we wanted to see where all the traffic that came into the circle from north, how it split up. And then we calibrated it with our own count that we had done, hard count. And this was within 300 cars. I mean, we're talking about the hard count was 10,300, and the street light count was 10,000. Which, on any given day, that's the type of distribution or margin of error we would expect. So I mean, it would tell you which leg everybody went to. So the seven legs. To ask a consultant to do that would cost you thousands and thousands of dollars to do that analysis. So the roadway, okay, you can do things where you can divide it up by freight, by commercial activity versus personal activity. And, you know, the way that they get this data a lot is from things like weather apps. So, you know, you check in at a location, like, oh, what's the temperature? And then you drive somewhere else and you check in, you know, I check the weather. Well, it knows you just took your trip, you know, and it knows the time that, you know, you took. And it's amazing. I mean, it's creepy in a way, you know, but at the same time, it's like, so it's funny about when people say they don't want a black box in their car. It's like, we're all driving. We carry, it's not even just your car. It's everywhere you go. And the data that whatever, you know, is being shared from a lot gives them the ability to estimate your income, estimate, you know, where you live, where you work, all that stuff.
So I've got to add AMAS to the organizations to check off that are stealing my information.
Yeah. We're not stealing your information. We're just looking at the information that someone else stole.
Right.
I mean, this is all obviously perfectly legal. It's just, you know, but it's like, I think it also shows just where we're heading in terms of data, is that cell phones are an incredibly lucrative and powerful data tool. And everything you do on a cell phone, you might as well just assume your data is being mined, you know, with your activities. But what it does provide on a positive is it gives us stuff that we would never, ever be able to collect. Giving us some sort of baseline.
That's what you need, is an indication of the traffic flows.
Right.
You know, morning this way, evening that way, splits,
yeah,
turns, joining, everything.
And where they're coming from, because what I was curious, yeah, about too is just like for bikes on Akron Peninsula Road. So where, you know, where are most of these trips? How are they getting there? Where are they going? And all this kind of interesting stuff. And I don't know. It's like I really like the data, but I also, in a way, feel kind of like, man, this is crazy that we can tell this.
So would this capture whether a cyclist drove to a trailhead and then got on the bike?
It would be
versus going, you know, riding from their home?
In a roundabout way, it probably could. It would have to be real complex analysis, because what you would be trying to figure out is, like, we have to think about everything in terms of their origin and their destination.
Yeah.
And so if we take a look at how many people, say, pass through a point on the trail, and then we took maybe, like, in this example, like, the way we would probably do it would be, okay, so here's 303 in Akron, Cleveland. And let's just assume we want to know how many people are riding their bikes to the trailhead versus that. Well, what we would do is we would put a gates, we call them gates, we put an area to count on the trail, and then we put areas to count on the three roadways. And by a process of almost like elimination, you could say, okay, well, if we know that the count here is 77, and here, and here is an estimate of 8, or something, you know, whatever it would be, we can reasonably assume, and again, in, you know, probably high margin of error, but we can assume that, you know, 80% of the people are driving to the trailhead because we're not seeing the bikes appear on the roadways. They just appear on the trail at that point. You'd also have to make sure, you'd have to do the same thing on the two sides of the trail too, because people would also pass through coming from north and south. So it would be a more complex analysis, but you could probably get a sense of how it happens.
I mean, you know, this is just a personal bias. I mean, I think people riding their bikes from their homes is just a much better, it's much better for everybody.
I absolutely. And our goal, you know, I think in a way, is to try to provide those trails where we're providing more and more access.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing, and I mean, just as someone that, you know, lives right about here, this highway interchange is what keeps me from doing that more often, because I don't feel safe going underneath Route 8. I don't like how I feel. I just don't feel like people see, you know. Whereas what Hudson's looking at doing is creating a trail down to here, to Barlow, to here. And so it's like, well, now, you know, for someone like me who has a 7 and 5 year old, like, we can come down here, ride the trail, and then we've got access to. And I'm not worried about putting two kids' bikes and all that. You know, I mean, it's a great way to ride.
Well, and you know, the raison d'etre for our organization is to try to get it reopened to recreational users.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an incredibly important connection. Because, you know, I don't want to be on Wheatley.
Right, right.
I've got an e-bike. I can now do Martin,
mm-hmm, yeah,
but I can't do Ira, even with the e-bike.
Yeah.
Everett is so incredibly important, you know, to the whole this is probably going off message,
no, but
what's happening with the Knight Foundation's connectivity in Akron? You know, trying to
The so many initiatives, and so like I always blank out on the names. Which one is this? It's the
Ohio and Erie Canal thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's the Dan Rice's organization, and what is that called? I know what you're, but it's the idea of getting. Is it not Civic
Knight Foundation is trying to get a trail from every Akron neighborhood to the towpath.
Oh, are they? I don't think
I think it's all part of that.
Yeah.
Oh, is it all part of that?
Yeah, but Knight Foundation is really putting a lot of muscle behind that.
Like what you said, then, instead of having to drive all the way over there, you'd have a local connector trail that would then.
Well, and we've been mostly involved in the Rubber City Heritage planning, which is looking at Middlebury, Goodyear, that side, getting them over to it's going to be tough to get to the towpath, but that's the goal, is to get over there. I guess I didn't realize, is that through the Great Streets program that they were discussing?
They were doing, Dan Rice's group was sponsoring a survey that was done by some outfit from Europe.
Okay.
We had a bunch
of. Is it Copenhagen?
Yes,
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it's really like the number of efforts that are out there sometimes. It's like,
Time, moving right along.
7:30. But no, I was going to, and we can talk about Everett offline too. I just had some conversations about it today.
Oh, we will talk offline.
So the next section we really do go into some of the bicycling and pedestrian facilities. Fred had printed these out of what not to do.
There's that whole section is very detailed into, bump outs and mid-block crossing, crosswalks, shared use paths and all that stuff. Pictures, all that stuff. We get into a section called connectivity. Where we really hone in on the trails. This is where the trails kind of come in. This part of the trails, or this part of the plan, we really focus on what has been completed. What you see here, again, a lot more detail was given to me. I just pulled out three of the things that were completed for Summit County. Additionally, for Summit County, what they're looking to do as far as trail connections in these areas here. Again, they give you a whole Excel sheet that will go into the plan. Portage County, same thing. They gave us a list of things that they already have completed or would be completed in the near future, and then also what they're doing in the future as far as trail connections. Most of their parks or preserves, looking for a boardwalk and a bridge, probably the two biggest things, and the other one's an accessible trail.
And the fact that they finally got
that's a big deal for them.
Yeah, it's huge, and their park director's wonderful.
Chris is great. She's the one that
gave me.
They have some nice walking parks in Portage County.
So then the last part of the plan, we get into just, again, some general recommendations. So we're encouraging the communities to do their own bike and pet planning. Again, as an MPO for the area, and although I could probably do Akron's bike and pet plan since I worked for the city for 23 years and lived in the city for a little bit longer than that, I could probably do that one. But, I'm not very versed in Talmadge, what they're their community would need and all that stuff. So we want to be a part of theirs, but we want to encourage them to do their own and be more specific than what our plan is. Prioritize school areas. We talked about Safe Routes to School. Consider improvements and road diets during surfacing projects. And I put articles up there because I'm sure you saw in the Beacon. There's been some articles about, I think more so about the word road diet. And the fact that this seems to be, they're calling it a fad, that communities are trying to shrink roads down to allow cyclists to pass through the corridor, but then that creates congestion. Of course, they talked about, Exchange Street and Kenmore Boulevard right now, they're talking about that, that's creating congestion. Somebody wrote another, an article, a response to that, sort of advocating for road diets and really what the facts are, and then somebody, I'm sure about
dietary about that.
And then somebody after that. The only interesting, on the last article, there were three articles, one was for it, the other two were against it, but the last article brought up a very interesting comment. He said that he was talking about Talmadge Avenue over here in North Akron, and he was saying that that's very heavily congested now since they did a road diet. And the one comment he made is that now people are driving through neighborhoods to get to, they're trying to bypass Talmadge Avenue and they're driving through neighborhoods, which then, I don't know if he had any facts or how he knows this, the person that wrote that article, he said that that's what's causing more pedestrian deaths, is that the cars are now trying to bypass these congested areas because of road diets, and that's causing them to go through neighborhoods.
There should be a map. I mean, it would be easy to map where the pedestrian situations have happened.
I think so. Again, I don't know where he got that information, but I thought that was interesting.
Is this local, Daryl? Is that the
Talmadge? He was talking about Talmadge Avenue.
Okay.
And
so
he was saying people were taking the side streets to get to a location, even to go, over Talmadge Avenue instead of coming up Talmadge Avenue and going. They're coming up through the neighborhoods. Again, I don't know what.
I think it's crazy because I just used it this week because Route 8 was bad and rush hour morning. It was so smooth. I love it. I mean, I just think it.
Well, your streetlight application could put
yes.
proof or disprove that because if you put it on
monitors. I find it stressful to drive on because I'm not worried about am I going to get stuck behind a left hand turner or a right hand turner. I just drive. I think it's great.
I didn't get stuck behind any buses, but we recommend high quality design. Design it right. Again, going back to road diets, where it makes sense. Because a road is heavily traveled by cyclists, doesn't mean it's due for a road diet. It doesn't call for a road diet. I mean, it's not going to make sense. It's going to only create congestion because. As I always say, I have a car, I drive a car, I also like to ride my bike, so there has to be a medium here. It can't be less against that. And the last one just being probably one of the most important things that I really am trying to do more of, amateurs in general, is to encourage and promote these bicycling events that are going on, these pedestrian events that are going on. I'm hoping that Amex can be the hub for some of this stuff, where NeoStar, the archetype club, we can put your events that are going on and try to get it out to the bicycle clubs or social media. We might even use our own newsletter that we put out. At this point, we only do it twice a year, but we might do more and add cycling and pedestrian news on the back and get that out along with our bike user map that then we have a copy. You've seen the bike user maps. At this point, we're looking to update those maps. We don't have any left. I was pushing them out all year last year. We're updating them a little bit. There's a few.
Leave Everett Road.
Leave Everett Road. Everything. Okay. I don't think we're going to do anything that too crazy. We do want to add Electric Pete's. Is that where you got your bike? Electric Pete's?
No. He's a good guy, he's a very good guy. I got mine out on the West Coast.
He's on the Main Street. He wasn't on that map, so we're making sure.
We try to include all the bike shops.
Safety tips.
So we gave out 10,000 of those things.
And we have entity groups that want more. They've called. I've had about four groups, Summit County, somebody from Summit County, Portage Park District wants
hopefully,
more.
They ran out. Yeah, Akron Canton Airport is now talking about putting in bicycle assembly areas. It's an interesting story, but it was like, how do we put out the welcoming flag to cyclists?
Yeah, the Visitors Bureau, I walked over with an entire box, and they had been putting those in the airport. And they're the one of the groups that wants more. They're out.
Yeah, yeah.
So when are you going to go? When are you going to go modern and put this online and make it interactive?
Say that again.
When are you going to go modern, put it online and make it interactive and update it frequently?
Can look into that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would be guys out there.
How much tax money are you going to get? You should
have a version that was online. We kept running into these issues with, I mean, the Switching Gears website has been a challenge. It just has, you know, when we started off with sort of that, like, idea of sign up and membership, it ended up getting spammed to the nth degree. And slowed the thing down, and then we almost had to like rebuild it in a more simple form. And since then, we haven't put as many resources in to kind of advancing that, because I think we felt that we're at a crossroads with, do we just fold it into our site and, you know, still keep the domain and all that, but have it go to, you know, so we're only maintaining one thing versus two, so that, you know, but we've had some challenges with that.
Okay, but we will. But to do that, I'm just going to focus on all so this is the last slide, but we can talk about other stuff. But, you know, we have the Switching Gears up there. These are what we do, MS does, to encourage these events, the public engagement, but also to get the word out. You know, like you said, the Switching Gears site, we could probably do a little bit more with that. We'll look at that. But, you know, I think once we have this, and we can then upload that on our Facebook page, under our website, under that. Last year we did a lot of flyers, and Fred, you were the catalyst, you know, for this conversation when you were talking about how there's so many events out there, but nobody really can go to one place and do that. And so that's why I was hoping, instead of doing a bunch of flyers, doing a newsletter, or piggybacking off of this newsletter, and then putting that on through all the bike shops. But again, then that goes right hand in hand with, you know, uploading that image and this newsletter onto our Twitter, tweeting that out, Facebook. So then I think the ball starts rolling from there. But once we have a, you know, place where we can put this information on, kind of go from there. But I know that, you know, in our conversation, it's taken me a year. But I think like you said, there needs to be a location where we can put, not just cycling, for pedestrian. I mean, I guess there's walks around downtown Akron going on right now for the construction, particularly. But again, walks that we can help promote. You know, somebody.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 20 minutes.
So,
please make final selections now.
Like
thank you.
Bike and Brainstorms, we had four last year, as you know. We had Akron, Green, Talmadge, and Ravenna. Right now, we have two underway. That one's hoping to be in Hudson, and one is pretty confirmed here in Akron on the west side. They want to go from the West Market Street to Red Cross Building, Merriman Road. They want to travel down Merriman Road, Memorial Parkway, get on the trail, come up to somehow connect to Aqueduct, the new Aqueduct Street that
make everybody hike their bike up Hickory.
Yeah, I'm really sure. And that came out of the police department. They contacted Eric Wagner
and I think one of the things that we do want to focus on a little bit is the having these meetings for the education and safety component of bike riding, because I feel like what we keep looking at is, you know, there are places where the infrastructure improvements have their limits, and we still need to educate people, like with the 3-foot law and things like that. And so I think, you know, Daryl's focus on some of these things is great, because, you know, that's really a big component of it for drivers and for riders. I mean, you know, because I think, you know, if you talk to a car rider, they'll be like, well, the bikes never follow the road, you know, or follow the rules. And if you talk to a, you know, bicyclist, it's like, the cars don't know what to do. And you know, and I think we've all witnessed both, you know. And I think that's important. I think even when we were talking about the work that Renee was doing, trying to just teach people the safest ways to ride a bike in traffic, those things are really important. So I think we want to focus on those this summer with our bike and brainstorm.
Yeah. Yeah, we're hoping to get a couple more for this year, working on that, and we've talked about, we have that Connected Communities grant, we talked about Safe Routes to School, we constantly, we're talking in here, there's a better block in Akron again this year, on Copley Road, Hawk, between Hawkins, I believe, and 77, that business district. I think it's going to be Memorial Day weekend, I think. Police streets, you know, Akron, I think, has an ordinance that we worked on. I helped work on that police streets ordinance. I think they passed that. Coventry Township just had Coventry Township. I think they are exploring the police streets ordinance and looking at that. And Mike Mapp and James Watt coming up this year. Again, if you know anybody or if yourselves are interested in James Watt, I'll plug that out. I think it's just a good thing. It's just that weekend, May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And, you know, if you want to, if you, anybody or you know anybody that's interested in talking and walking a group around, topic can be anything. It can be on a trail. It can be, you know, something that maybe you're a passion for. I think it's a good thing for James Walker. A lot of that pedestrian component to that, obviously. So that's really it that we have. Again, I think we plan to have more of a more detailed draft, and we can certainly get that out to you guys. Discuss it at our meeting.
Again, Fred, I really liked your idea about the pavement.
Yes.
Including that in our existing conditions. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Because one of the things, and this is, and to provide even more context, one of the things that we're, you know, we used to do these plans where we would recommend these specific trails. And what started, like, I mean, I'm you know, like, and it was great when we hadn't finished the towpath or when we hadn't finished these certain projects that we knew we wanted to finish. Now the spine has been built, and we're trying to figure out the secondary trails, and it's very hard to rank them. And what we're finding is that it's a lot easier when we're looking at funding decisions. We're looking at, okay, is this trail buildable? Is this trail safe? You know, is this trail going to get the use that we expect it to? And so we don't want to necessarily be beholden to, you know, well, the line on the map says it's got to go through here and here, because just it doesn't ever work that way in the recreational trail planning.
Shades of green.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, we funded trails like the Confluence Trail that eventually could not be built. And so I think while we want to show what's existing and we want to share what the metro parks or parks have planned, we feel like we need to focus on, you know, on the education, on the type of facility that's being built, and, you know, on how that's going to be used, much more so than, you know, a specific type of connection, which Summit County Trails Map does, Portage does that, you know, and we support all those things. But for our agency, we're trying to take a look at it from a slightly different perspective now, just because, you know, the secondary network of trails, I think, is there's 100 different ideas out there of what to do at this point. And if you sort of just like, you know, this isn't a criticism of the Summit County Trail Plan, but you get to a point where it's just spaghetti on the map, and it doesn't, I feel like it doesn't work very well.
And the streetlight application will help for the next update that we do in the next couple of years. That'll be able to help. I mean, even if we're just doing it.
Honestly, yeah, sorry. Know. No, but the reason I even started saying that was because I think we could get to a point where we start saying, are our federal funds better used at resurfacing a piece of the towpath than building a lesser used secondary connection? I think at some point we might need to have those discussions, as, you know, if we're trying to get to all asphalt or if we're trying to get to a certain thing, I think then we need to start making that analysis of, you know, because we can only do so much at some point, you know, we need to start worrying about the maintenance of our best and, you know, our pride and joy facility of the bike and hike and the towpath. And so that's another concern. Sorry, Mr. Helms.
Yeah, I guess we've been stuck with so much money to fund certain trails and a limited length of those. What would be happen if we arbitrarily said anything that's under 25 mile an hour is a legal trail, or if it's three lane, if it's under 30 mile, and then we have the bicyclists go out there and actually certify all these roads, you know, remunerate the basic payment, which you're talking about. Is this road a legitimate road, this side road? And then, quote, 6-8 months down the road, we find out which goat paths through these neighborhoods are being traveled because this path has been certified as a safe path, low speed limit, and, you know, good community environment type thing. So we find out, well, here's a goat trail. We got 3 miles of it, and we only got to perfect 300 feet of it to make it a full-fledged safe trail. Is that a potential to basically take the neighborhoods and certify the whole neighborhood as a trail because it's a safe level? I mean, right now we're limited to how many hundred, you know, we don't have that many miles of certified trails.
Right.
And then if it's over 35 mile an hour, if it has a painted lane, it could be considered a trail. So there's a certain speed limit where we need it. Hey, got to be painted if it's over this mileage. Less than this mileage, we don't paint it, but we certify that there's no grates going the wrong way and things like that, and what the condition is.
I think I see what you're saying.
And it can be a moving thing, too, is obviously some of these neighborhood roads are done every 15 years.
Right.
Obviously, well, at this point, it's to a point it's not passable by bikes because there's too many chuck holes. But 10 years out of 15, it might be a perfectly good trail.
You're talking about all of Summit County. You're talking about
That was actually, when we talked internally, that's one of the things. Dave from Safety, he rides his bike a lot, but he said he's pretty much been done riding. You know, he used to ride to work down West Market, and he finally said it's just not safe anymore. That because of the road condition, you know, and his argument is that honestly, at this point with the road condition, the first and best thing we can do is just fix the roads, because that's his argument, is that, you know, don't even worry about the bike lanes or anything. You know, it's the condition of the road is just, especially on, you know, the shoulders where it starts to degrade first. So, you know, and I think there is some truth to that. That is a challenge that we face. Mm-hmm. Is that the road condition right now is just, it's not good.
Well, and the other part of that is, and AMATS at one point, I think with the switching gears you were doing it, is you got to get people to report problems up to date.
May I have your attention, please? The library will close in 10 minutes.
So really,
please check out your materials now.
If we had a network of bicyclists that knew they could go report to some central location, and it would be updated. But that's going to take a lot of people. That's going to take resources to do it.
And then even when you identify it, then who can fix it?
To your point, the people in bike clubs are planning rides. They do that all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean,
they're thinking about where to take the bike ride.
A good ride leader is trying to look at road condition as well.
Taking that into account of where they're going to. Yeah.
Or they could split it up. Well, hey, we've got this ride that's going to go from here to here, but this segment we're going to split in 10 different routes to check out these 10 different roads and record it.
The question
then come back together.
The question is, where are they going to report it to? Who's going to keep it up to date? How can you access it once you do that?
Who's
I agree. The ABC rides are all riders and leaders know where they're going, and they've got all kinds of routes, but they can't report it. Where are they going to report it to?
Right.
Who's going to make it available?
And such. I mean, you know, same for Hudson Bello and lots of.
Do we need to pass a resolution?
No. I will say just to give everybody time. Is there any other issue that we want on the record tonight? Any concerns, thoughts about anything in particular?
Would any kind of recommendation from us about this gas tax be of use to you?
At this point, I think we're already. We've sent
some advanced resolutions in the previously to send down to Columbia.
Yeah. And that's where we are.
The mayors were behind it and everything. And
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and we'll stick around and be able to continue to talk.